like well, my guest to the program, James Jatras, a former U.S. diplomat out of Washington, D.C., and Mike Billington, Asia Desk Executive Intelligence Review out of Leesburg, Virginia. Thank you both for being with us. So let's start this off with Mike in Leesburg. Mike, Iran says the British vessel turned off its transponder and did not respond to its requests. Why do you think a vessel would actually turn off its communication system and not expect to answer for such a violation and others?
Well, it's very clear that the British have carried out a series of provocations. I would respond to your opening statement that you should be very careful not to make the mistake that somehow the U.S. is drawing the British into this situation. It's quite the opposite. Mm-hmm. We're dealing here with a British leadership, which is in total chaos and disarray internally, is now under direct attack from the Trump administration's attorney general, who is carrying out an investigation into the British MI6 GCHQ role in the attempted coup against President Trump. And they are closing in on the British role in this. The British are far more frightened of this than any incident in the Gulf. And their intent was to, in fact, provoke some sort of confrontation to try to draw the U.S. in, despite the fact that President Trump has repeated over and over again, we are not going to have a war with Iran, and nor does Iran want a war with the United States. It's the British who are desperately trying to provoke that war to break Trump from his commitment to no more regime change and to his commitment to making a friendly relationship with Russia rather than the kind of warmongering operation that was run by the British demonizing Russia and trying to drag the United States into a confrontation with Russia. Mm-hmm. So you have to look at this Iran situation in that global context. This is exactly why Mr. LaRouche is always warned. You have to start from the top down, looking at the continued role of the British Empire in frantically trying to prevent the United States from coming into agreement with Russia and China. And let me add, especially at this moment with the celebration of the 50th anniversary of the Apollo shot, where the entire world, Russia, China, India, Japan, South America, Brazil, all nations were celebrating this example of what man can achieve, especially if we join forces and work together. Okay. Frontiers of human knowledge.
All right, let me get James in on a discussion. James, what do you think about Mike's analysis of the situation?
I think there's a lot to what he says regarding the whole investigation into Russiagate and the British role in that. I think he's a bit more optimistic than I am that will come to fruition. Clearly, there are moves in that direction. Whether they will go anywhere remains to be seen. I think whatever the disarray is on the British side, having made a hash out of Brexit and the fight over the prime ministership with looks now Mr. Johnson going to succeed Prime Minister May, we have our own disarray here on the American side that whatever Mr. Trump's hesitation about getting into another new war, and I agree that is his preference. Unfortunately, he has saddled himself with the team, starting with National Security Advisor John Bolton, but also I would say Secretary of State Mike Pompeo.
Well, let me just jump in here right here, James. Let me just jump in here because both you and Mike are saying similar things. But then the question I would ask you would, why would he have put two individuals, two war hawks on his team, if really he does not want more war?
There are many, that's something that those of us who supported him in 2016 have been wondering all along. Why did he turn to all these Bush retreads and warmongers if that's what he does not want to do? Some people say because he's a total hypocrite. Other people say because he's following instructions from Sheldon Adelson or whoever it is that he is depending on financially. Other people say because he doesn't know much about staffing and personnel in Washington, he turned it over to the Heritage Foundation. There are many, maybe he has supreme confidence that you can let these little people run around and do their dirty work, but at the end of the day, I'll make the final decision, which is very naive in my view. But in any case, that's what he's got, and whatever his own personal inclinations are, he's got the wrong team for them. And if he doesn't want to get sucked into a war that he doesn't want through provocations, he's got to fire these people.
Well, Mike, your take. Now, we've seen a couple of weeks ago, we saw, of course, a super tanker near Gibraltar carrying Iranian oil basically being taken, stolen, pirated by the British Navy. And now we have seen, of course, on Friday, with the Iranian authorities, IRGC, actually impounding a British flag vessel because of what it says maritime violation. But we have seen starkly different reactions between these two incidents. The first one involving the supertanker near Gibraltar, basically no one, none of the European capitals said anything. But of course now we're hearing from London and Berlin and Paris and of course Washington about Iran must return this vessel immediately. Do you see the double standards? And if you do, why is it the case?
Oh yeah, absolutely, there's no question. Let me just briefly add to what Jim said. I agree with Jim entirely about the danger of Bolton and Pompeo. I would just add one potential reason for that to the ones that he gave, which is what Abraham Lincoln did, which he decided it was better to have his opponents in his cabinet where he could keep eye on them. Remember that that Trump was had hired other people for those positions who simply refused to do what he said. That doesn't mean Pompeo and Bolton are either, but as Trump repeats over and over, I make the decisions. So we have that fact. Now, keep in mind also that he just this last couple of days arranged with Rand Paul, who is one of the few leading political figures in America who has been adamantly opposed to all of these regime change wars. And Rand Paul and President Trump agreed that Rand Paul would meet with Mr. Zarif, as he apparently did, and may continue some sort of back channel negotiations, not even so bad or public, with Iran. As far as the actual situation with the ships, I know that Mr. Zarif said that we were justified in doing this because the ship had broken laws, whereas the British were committing an act of outright piracy on the high seas. That's absolutely true. Although it's also the case that even some of your own political leaders, Larijani, for instance, in the parliament, said that this is it's a matter of the British committing piracy and we have responded. So maybe they're deciding to enforce the laws a bit more than they usually do. But it's a clear fact that they are doing Mr. Kadkodai, I don't pronounce his name properly.
Kadkodai, yes.
Yeah. He also just said that the rule of reciprocal action is well known in
international. My question, though, was actually talking about the Western response to these two incidents that is starkly different and basically pointing to very much a double standard. The British.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, go
absolutely.
Ahead.
The British are famous at this. I mean, the British have carried out numerous false flag operations to get people to go into war. They've committed many atrocities in those wars, the British and the Americans, for that matter, under Bush and Obama in Iraq and Libya. They tried to do the same in Syria, and the Russians, with Trump, actually, were able to prevent that so far. There's gross hypocrisy by the empire. The empire is still there. The British Empire never sunk into the sea and somehow the American Empire took over. The British had to fight strenuously for decades after World War II to try to break the influence of Franklin Roosevelt, to break the influence of Jack Kennedy, to break this idea of progress in America, and to impose the free market, free trade, legalized drugs, legalized perversity, and so forth, which unfortunately has succeeded to a great extent. The U.S. economy and the U.S. social structure is in a complete disarray. And Trump has committed himself to reversing that. He has not been terribly effective yet. And I think that depends more on us and our allies around the world to make sure that what he intends and says he's going to do, which is why he was elected, gets implemented, which means breaking the British Empire, breaking the power of Wall Street, which works hand in hand with the City of London, ending these regime change wars, be it coming up in Iran or in Venezuela, they have to be reversed. Mr. Zarif now is in Venezuela, by the way, with a non-aligned movement meeting there. And I think these are the key issues, but you have to focus at the top.
Okay, focus at the top. Your take on all of this, James. I mean, do you agree with Mike that basically it is London that is leading the way? Because also, if we look at, I understand what both of you are saying about Donald Trump, but as we say, actions speak louder than words. Now, Mike has just talked about, for example, Venezuela, but what we have seen out of Donald Trump is a total pressure on Venezuela, going against the elected president there, trying to get someone else, putting someone else in his place, naming him the president. So again, we see total contradiction to what you may say that he's trying to do and what he's really doing. He seems like he really wants war with these countries, or totally breaking them and bring them down to their knees, not something based on respect.
Well, there is even a theory that Donald Trump actually is playing five-dimensional chess, that he really does want to break down this empire, whether you see it as headquartered in Washington or in London. And the way you do that is you take its defects to their logical conclusion and watch the whole thing collapse. I mean, look what happened with Venezuela. We made the threats. We were going to overturn the government. We were going to put Guaido in power. Where has that gone? Where has that gone? Where are our threats against Iran right now? It was pretty clear after the drone was shot down. He didn't want to do anything, even though he was being pressured to do it. So I think, again, if I could give a little ray of sunshine here, is there some hope that we're getting close to the tipping point where a lot of threats and bluster simply don't translate into action? Because some people here, starting with the president, but maybe including some of the more sane people at the Pentagon, realize it would be a disaster if we went down that road. We're not going to do it. There's even a theory that you find, for example, on a site like Moon of Alabama, that the Iranians have what is called escalatory dominance, that they are in a position to decide how far this goes because they know Donald Trump doesn't want to pull the trigger. Now, some people say, well, you can't make him a paper tiger. You can't taunt him to show how impotent he is in global affairs because he might end up doing something rash. But let's hope we're getting to the point where threats and bluster don't translate into action and somehow we avoid a conflict. And he's got to understand that his not being reelected next year may be the least of our problems if he actually pulls the trigger on this.
Well, Mike, I mean, Jim has just said that actions speak louder than words, and basically Donald Trump is trying to avoid conflict. At the same time, if we're talking, whether we're talking about Venezuela or whether we're talking about Iran, the reality is that there is a much increased pressure on the general population, on the countries as a whole. So it appears what Donald Trump is trying to do, bring these countries to their knees and basically then accept whatever he wants them to accept.
Well, let me say first that Jim Jattras is a good example of someone who does make his actions fit his words. He recently did, and I commend you, Jim, a really beautiful brief statement about the life of Lyndon LaRouche and the importance of those ideas of Lyndon LaRouche and the world, pointing out that the people who prosecuted Mr. LaRouche and myself, I was also put in jail by Robert Miller at the same time that Lyndon LaRouche was put in prison, that the people who ran that campaign against LaRouche were doing that to stop his ideas, and the same people then went after Donald Trump precisely because Trump had the potential of living up to those ideas which Mr. LaRouche had put in place. Now, what we do have with Mr. Trump is that he's willing to go with these kinds of internal interventions like he did in Venezuela. I do not commend that at all. And as he has done, as previous presidents also did, to try to undermine Iran and others, the so-called color revolutions. But he has adamantly drawn the line on war. And when Bolton told him that the Venezuelan people would quickly go over to Guaido and turn against Maduro, it failed completely. The Venezuelan people would have none of that. It didn't work. And Trump said, that's it. No more military, no military threats. We're not going to use the military in Venezuela or in Iran. But what's required is that we get this to a higher plane. Now, look, for instance, at the role of the Belt and Road coming out of China, with China and Russia collaborating completely. Russia and China are friends of all the players in the Middle East, both Iran and Saudi Arabia, both the Palestinians and Israel. It's not like they approve one side or the other against that, but they're willing to work together, and we must bring the United States into that agreement with the Belt and Road, with Russia and China, to the idea that there is a common purpose to mankind, and that the basis on which we can resolve these British-created divisions in the Middle East, Sunni versus Shia, Arab versus Jew, and so forth, the way to overcome that, the only way to overcome that, is by bringing in this idea of a common aim for mankind, what Xi Jinping calls the win-win, bring the Belt and Road, bring in peace through development, to collaborate on those things that in fact are for the benefit of all mankind. Mm. The space program, the 50th anniversary of the moonshot, is a classic case where you can motivate people, give them a sense of a mission, a sense of a future, not this idea that we're in perpetual warfare as we had under Bush and Obama.
Well, Mike, if that's the case, if we look at, staying with you, Mike, with Iran had the agreement, the JCPOA, with the United States and other parties, it was the United States who came out of that, under Donald Trump, under the president who you say actually does not want conflict. And you just talked about countries working together and trying to accomplish various issues, but then it seems like Donald Trump is definitely making unilateral decisions. For example, why then, if his goal is actually not to have conflict or war, why would he pull out of the JCPOA?
Well, like I said, he has fallen for this idea of internal dissension, not quite color revolutions, but leaning in that direction. But my sense of what Trump did by pulling out of the JCPOA and by his plan that he's put forward through his son for a development plan for the Middle East is that he wants to resolve all of these issues. He thinks big. He wants to resolve the perpetual conflict that has been the character of the Middle East entirely from the time of the beginning of the British Empire in the last part of the 18th century. Wants to do that. To do it, to succeed, he must openly bring together Russia, China, and the United States through the Belt and Road
to
do
that. Stay with me, Mike, almost out of time. Jim, your take on all of this, because it actually seems that, of course, Mike is saying that he wants to end the conflict, he wants things to be calmer, but it just seems that things are definitely not going towards that direction, and that there are heightened tensions, not lessened tensions, right now.
Maybe he thinks that through threatening people and pressuring them, that's how you get to a better deal. I think that's what he wanted to do in Korea, for example. Of course, there in Korea, in South Korea and Japan, our closest allies want to have a deal. Whereas, unfortunately, in the Middle East, we're talking about the Israelis, the Saudis, and the Emiratis. They don't want a deal. They want regime change. They want to destroy Iran. And that, unfortunately, puts things in a much different light. That strategy, which may work in Korea, but still hasn't panned out yet, I don't think really can work in Iran. I don't know if he understands that.
All right. Well, I would love to continue this conversation, but unfortunately, we are out of time. Appreciate both of you being with us. Out of Washington, D.C., James Jatras, former U.S. diplomat, and Mike Billington, Asia Desk Executive Intelligence Review out of Leesburg, Virginia. And as always, viewers, we appreciate you being with us on another debate. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing off for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Hope to see you next time.